window, Doctor. Tell me, who are you?
Do you know, like we were saying, about the Earth revolving? It's like when you're a kid. The first time they tell you that the world's turning and you just can't quite believe it because everything looks like it's standing still. I can feel it. The turn of the Earth. The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me. Clinging to the skin of this tiny little world, and if we let go, that's who I am.
I shall miss them. Yes, I shall miss them. Silly old fuss spots.
To, and that's the point, really. I have to really want to bring them back in front of my eyes. The rest of the time, they sleep in my mind. And I forget, and so will you. Oh, yes, you will. You'll find there's so much else to think about, to remember. Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing. Let's get some sleep and let this poor old man stay awake.
Do you know the answer to everything?
Yes. No, no. Answers are easy. It's asking the right questions which is hard.
Nobody remembers being born. And nobody remembers dying. Is that why we always stare into the eye sockets of the skull? Because we're asking, what was it like? Does it hurt? Are you still scared?
Well, there you are, young man. What do you think of that now, eh? A Viking helmet?
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe? What do you think it is, a space helmet for a cow?
And I know things. Secrets that must never be told. Knowledge that must never be spoken.
Certain moments in time are fixed.
No more. No more.
So he believes that to travel faster than light would mean going backwards in time, back to the Big Bang?
And beyond. Monarch believes he will meet himself there. He believes he is God.
We have the power to do anything we like. Absolute power over every particle in the universe. Everything that has ever existed or ever will exist.
I was taken out of time for another reason. And I have every intention of finding out what it is.
No one else will ever have to live like this. No one else will ever have to feel this pain. Not on my watch.
Greetings, time travelers, to another installment of the Who's On podcast. This is installment number 41. I'm joined by Rob and Peter, and this week we'll be discussing Hellbent.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Initial thoughts, Peter?
Ooh. Initial thoughts on Hellbent. This one had a really awesome feeling as a season ender and as a kind of an era ender. As I was watching it and seeing elements of it, I could see where Moffat's drawing from the past episodes and kind of tying up some threads, or even just revisiting old threads. For example, the common folk gathering around the doctor while he's having supper or lunch or whatever it was, and just the joy of being in the presence of a great one that you could see in their eyes and faces. And it reminded me of how prior doctors we're always told, well, you never got a chance to experience the adulation of those that you've saved. You don't know the joy of those who you have saved before. Or, in the case of someone like Davros, trying to destroy that mentality. You know, you've destroyed so much and you've ruined so many lives, kind of a thing. Here's the Doctor just living with the common people. And you see in the soldiers' faces later on how much they honor and respect him for ending the Time War. And so that was just a neat element of Moffat kind of tipping his hat to prior conversations about the Doctor and how his experience has always just been elements. And for the first time in a while, he sat in the same place. Not bored, not frustrated like he's been shown to do other times, but just for the first time being patient. It was neat. It was very fun to see. So
We'll get back to the common Gallifreyans mm-hmm. in a minute, but I want to hear what Rob has to say about this episode as well. To you, was it one that you're going to be rewatching over and over again?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. Not because it wasn't a good episode. It was just that, I don't know, it was the completion of the season, completion of the story with Clara.
It's the first time we've seen Gallifrey in a long, long time.
Mm. Yeah.
Since the Day of the Doctor, since mm-hmm. the Barn and John yeah. Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a little disappointed in the way that they presented it?
No, at least not with the way they did the stuff on Gallifrey. I thought that was neat. I've always loved the Barn. When we first saw that with John Hurt, I thought that was really cool. I don't know. It kind of sits outside of some of the other lore about the Doctor, though. Even in the course of the episode that either this episode or previous episode with me, she talks about how, like, you know, you were born a high Gallifreyan, yet he lived in this little shabby barn, like out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, high-born Gallifreyan. It was interesting that she used that phrase, because that's an older phrase that she probably wouldn't have even known of. Although, who knows? I mean,
well, maybe with the interaction she's had with other people,
because he's a Prydonian. He's from the Prydonian chapter, and it was interesting. I didn't see any garb from any other chapter in this episode.
No.
It was all Prydonian colors.
Mm-hmm.
We have visited Gallifrey outside of the Citadels before in one episode with Leela in the... It's not the Deadly Assassin. Oh, my goodness. I just drew a blank. But anyway, they weren't dressed like that. They were dressed more as tribal.
Right.
And they specifically wanted to be separate from the Time Lords. They wanted to have a simpler life. So it was different in this one to actually see them. That you, as Peter, as a new Doctor Who fan, you wouldn't have seen the contrast in that. That to me is like, hey, where's their leathers? Where's their skins and their spears? And this is the kind of people they were outside of the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
I got to try to find it now, though.
While you're looking for that, though, the question then becomes, how many years different has it been since the leathers and the spears and when the Doctor has taken the long way around? You know, how many years was the Time War? How much will a culture change with that level of just planet-shattering trauma? So I think if we had seen a flashback back to the spears and leathers and stuff like that you're looking at, it would have denied what culture really is. Culture is always changing. It is always advancing. It is always shifting. It doesn't matter if you are an immortal being. That was one thing that always kind of tweaked me about, like, Tolkien's elves. They never changed from age to age to age. They were always the same. This immortal race that used the same architecture, the same technology, the same everything. They just stayed the same, and that's not life. Life is never static. It's always advancing.
Which is interesting, because in The Brain of Morbius, he brings that up with the Sisterhood of Karn, that they've never actually changed
because
they've never had death. They've never really experienced that. And we see the main sister, the Sisterhood of Karn. Now, the name of the episode, the Tom Baker episode, it was Leela's last episode called The Invasion of Time. It was the Sontarans got into the TARDIS, and Leela met her future husband, and another whole mythology was born out of that episode.
Hmm.
but initial thoughts, Rob. Did you see anything that stood out that in the future we're going to be looking back on and saying, "Oh, that was because of Hellbent"?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're going to see. I would assume we're going to eventually see stuff about me and half Clara, floating around doing whatever they're doing with their TARDIS.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was kind of silly, to be honest, because when I saw it, I went from, well, now we have immortals going around now that shouldn't be there. I mean, that's kind of the one thing that set me off right away was I was just thinking about the fact that me is immortal because of the chip. At least as far as we know, she will be immortal for however long.
Tidal waves. At least 4.5 billion years.
Tidal waves.
Yeah, and then Clara now, you know, until she gets sent back to that pull chamber or whatever they called it from, you know, the doctor called it.
Right.
She'll be living forever because as
Or kind of living.
Kind of living, yeah. Because I know I mentioned in I think the last episode that we watched, Face the Raven, the whole idea that she kept checking for a pulse and that me even said, like, oh, you know, we'll get you your pulse back.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think is, like, did they forget what the Raven is? Because, it was said that it will find you wherever you are through all of time and space, right? To kill you. Yes. So as soon as she gets her heartbeat back, she'll be dead, you know, within the next heartbeat. Because that's where the doctor said that they pulled her from her time stream. In that second between heartbeats. So that sounds to me like she will be dead as soon as she gets her heartbeat back, so I don't know why they kept checking for it like it would be a good thing to have. But that's beside the point.
It also harkens back to the Zygon inversion and invasion where she's connected to checking, Bonnie with the heartbeat.
Oh, actually, which maybe now... Wait. That could bring a whole other interesting thing into it too, which I didn't even think about. Is she still connected with Bonnie because of that? Even though Bonnie became Osgood?
I don't think so. One, you're dealing with... She's, for all intents and purposes, outside of the normal time stream. She was yanked out and is running parallel to... Now, granted, that parallel has become a Mobius strip in a way, because now she can play around with all space and time. But... I would think that Bonnie was connected to her up to the yanking out and will reconnect with her when she gets shoved back in.
Right.
But for now, she's kind of in a special type of limbo.
Well, see, what I was thinking about with it, though, too, is that, yeah, I agree with you on that. That, yeah, now that she's out of it, she's not connected to her, so she could interact with Bonnie and not have a problem, because obviously she's interacting with people and whatever.
Yeah, her body's in a time loop is what the doctor said. All her functions to maintain has been locked, suspended, time locked. Yeah.
But I wonder, though, even with the Raven, if any of the connection stuck around between her and Bonnie, even when she was extracted from the pod, are they still connected at all? And could that cause a problem with the Raven that maybe down the road...
Right now, who knows what another author would bring to it. But it doesn't seem like that would be... That they would be connected in any way now.
But, I mean, otherwise, with the episode, they kind of introduced the whole idea of the spirits that were on the little hoverboards down at the, you know, on Gallifrey at the base of the Citadel.
The ghosts.
Yeah.
The wraiths. Yeah, the cloister wraiths. As part of this enigmatic cloister war that we know nothing about, really.
This episode, I think, kind of... It was brave, because I think it kind of introduced a couple of new ideas and kind of did away with a couple of old ideas. Because I thought at one point that it was really only supposed to be Time Lords that were able to control the TARDIS. TARDI? What's the plural for TARDIS?
Well, you've seen companions run the TARDIS before.
But also after having been granted the permission by the Doctor to some degree.
And Tesh.
Yeah.
She controlled it.
And that may not be the case at all either anyway. But
yeah.
I don't know.
Actually,
I'm kinda weird about...
the TARDIS controls were isomorphic at one point where the Doctor had to be the one. And the Master's TARDIS is set up that way where nobody else can really use it.
I guess it's a security lock that they, you know,
right.
the Time Lords can choose to lock it to themselves or
right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that whole idea at the end there, but in general, I thought it was a good episode because it was, like I said, it was a brave episode. It tried to do a lot of things. The whole face-off between the Doctor and the Lord President I thought was interesting, considering he is Lord President as well. Mm. So I just kind of wonder who really had the authority there.
Rassilon versus the Doctor?
Well, that's what I mean.
I think that's a great example of the difference between power and authority.
Right. Well, of course, yeah. I mean, like, literally, the fact that the Doctor is Lord President as well.
Yeah.
You know, that he was given, you know, the sash and everything. I mean, yep. I just wonder who actually would have literally been the one to supersede.
Well, we saw it's the one where the will of the people went, and everybody ignored Rassilon in the end.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it would have taken one soldier in that firing squad to choose to actually shoot the Doctor. Into infinity, regeneration after regeneration, I gather. Unless I know a bullet can stop, you know, a Time Lord.
Mm-hmm.
If he's destroyed, he's destroyed.
Right.
And he can't have a chance to regenerate. Finally getting out of the confession dial, I thought was neat, because now the confession dial is whole. It actually right. has some information on mm-hmm. it.
I like the, again, bringing back the mist thing about the way it looked. When he had it in his hand, it mm-hmm. was closing up on itself. Just totally reminded me of the way the books and mist work, you know, showing the location where you are going to or where you came from in that book. And just, it was just a neat play on the way that they showed it.
And I like the story within a story idea where he went, he's in Nevada in the mm-hmm. United States, and he's driving a truck, I guess, right? Or is that somebody else driving a truck? No, I'm a little foggy on it. Anyway.
I think it was the other guy who
Clara
flagged down to carry him.
So he goes into the diner, and it's Clara there, mm-hmm. who he's seen the picture of for 4.5 billion years, or however long that picture survived mm-hmm. in the confession dial, but yet he doesn't know who she is, because he's going to be telling the story of why he forgot.
Right.
And then he tells other stories within this story.
Mm-hmm.
And Clara mm-hmm. tells a story within the story. It's just an interesting, very Neil Gaiman, World's End kind of story. A character in the story starts telling a story, and then that character starts telling a story. And I like that kind of
play. I thought, the neat thing I thought about the diner whole thing, too, was that it wasn't told in a way that you could tell which one had their memory erased.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you go back and watch it again, you're not sure if the Doctor's playing with her
mm-hmm.
about, or if she's like, my friend, him. Or if she's... Yeah, exactly, because mm-hmm. he's like, it's a song, it's called Clara. I don't know who she is.
Clever,
you know,
Moffat.
Like,
yeah.
So I just thought that was really neat.
That was Moffat really being clever and working it well.
Yeah,
and
actually making it work.
This is directed by Rachel Talalay again. She's mm-hmm. done a great job.
Yep.
And Moffat's done a great job. Oh, Rob, are you going to challenge me on that?
No.
Okay.
Before you showed up this morning, we were even talking that I think that we agree that that he's doing a good job at... Mm-hmm. kind of correcting some of the places that everything's gone astray.
Mm.
I mean, we'll get more into it with the next episode, you know, talking about the Husbands of River Song. But we think that, I think despite all of the, like, what are you doing now, Stephen? Like, he's doing a good job at cleaning up.
Yeah. Mm. And this is being the series ender, more or less, minus the Christmas episode. Overall, Peter, do you think the series worked well in Moffat's direction? And what do you think, it was better than Capaldi's first season?
I think this was definitely better than the first season. This one, because it had such a massive intellectual arc where you were looking at the truth and consequences of actions and how it created the ripples... And in the middle of the series, I was a little irked because it didn't seem like anyone was learning the lessons. And this last episode kind of demonstrated that they have learned the lesson, but they're just choosing to ignore some of the implications. Because, again, the Doctor is doing what the Doctor always does. And I think we get an idea of why it's not necessarily a choice he can make he is living who he is. And his very nature, his very will, is to be this force of nature. And he has almost no ability to really change himself. He must be who he is.
Piggybacking on that, it's almost as if Clara is telling him, like she's been telling him all series, to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And because of who he is actually being a doctor.
Yeah.
He's changing things and making up his own rules. And it's right. inferred that he made the rules in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like touches on who he really is. Like, right. is he time itself? Is mm-hmm. he a creator of bigger things? Is he the sunset and right. the stars?
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll get into during the next installment. But it just says, as my wife's theory goes about him being death, perhaps he's even greater than something eternal like that.
Mm-hmm. I think the process in my mind of thinking of the Doctor as being something even greater than what he was always presented as in the classic stuff is, it's still new enough to me that I'm like, I don't really know where to go with it yet.
Mm.
The idea is neat, but at the same time, I'm kind of like,
trying to fit your mind around the classic episodes? Where
something. It's not even that I'm trying to work it into the classic episodes, because I can just write it off to say that, you know, he's now in a place where he can kind of talk about it himself, whereas yeah. maybe for whatever reason he never felt comfortable with it to talk about it in the past. It's more just that when I look at William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton, like, I don't see him as being any more than a crotchety old man with a spaceship. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's a cranky old scientist that just wants to do his stuff. And at the same time, again, maybe that's because maybe that's that part of his life was new to him back then.
Well, also, in fairness, John Nathan Turner changed that in the McCoy episode, Revelation of the Daleks,
right.
or Resurrection of the Daleks, when it was inferred that Hartnell set up this whole thing with the casket in 1963 at Coal Hill School.
Mm-hmm.
Way back then, he had the Hand of Omega. He really stole the Hand of Omega, this great cosmic engineering device that can cut stars,
mm-hmm.
and created the Eye of Harmony, which powered all of time travel.
Yeah.
And so it was inferred that Hartnell, he not only ran because I was bored,
yeah.
but mm-hmm. he ran to steal the hand that he, Omega, and Rassilon all worked together on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the even greater
mm-hmm.
story that John Nathan Turner, during his last season, was working right. on in relation to Hartnell's doctrine. And we had to wrap that around the Hartnell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to come to grips with, yeah,
like how clever was he really?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He was just playing a crotchety old man as opposed mm-hmm. to being more.
Well, there's also aspects of, you have, from Jungian psychology, you have the self, and then you have personas. And sometimes those personas are what we cling to so strongly because there's an aspect of the self that we either fear or for some reason are repressing, mm-hmm. hiding from ourselves even, denying. And therefore, our persona is who we want to be until finally we've either come to grips with the self or the self has exploded outwards in a violent way and reasserted itself.
Yeah.
Which brings us to, I have audio here from Hellbent, and all credit, of course, to the BBC. But it also brings us to the discussion of the hybrid when he's sitting down at the table at the High Council, who he's having ejected as well from Gallifrey, leave my planet.
Mm-hmm.
All Matrix prophecies concur that this creature will one day stand in the ruins of Gallifrey. It will unravel the web of time and destroy a billion hearts to heal its own.
What color is it?
I don't know.
These prophecies, they never tell you anything useful, do they?
This is no time to play the fool.
It's the end of the universe. It's the only time I've got.
And you want me to keep you all safe?
Can you?
I'll need help, obviously. Gallifrey is at your command.
Well, not from you, Lord. No, you'd cramp my style. Look at your hats.
I'm going to need the use of an extraction chamber to talk to an old friend.
Hmm. So So we hear from the confession dial from the episode previous that he was scared. He was scared because he didn't know this prophecy and the hybrid. And this is that whole, like, the hybrid is the Zygons, the hybrid is a shield, the hybrid mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. is the hybrid is me at the end of the episode before this. Mm-hmm. And then we, at the end of this episode, we'll play a shield as the three possibilities there. And one of them involves the conclusion that she sees, yeah. which is clever. And also talks about who Missy is. And mm-hmm. actually, we'll just play that now because we're here,
we're
I
here
guess.
Talking about it.
Let's, yeah. And I love your guys' reaction to that, and I would love the reaction of the fans and our listeners as well with this reveal. Did you miss the reveal at the end? Did you actually connect the two from what she was saying? And if not, I'd love to
think. Hey, Doctor, who is the hybrid? Who threatens all of time and space?
Oh, that's easy. That's very, very easy. The hybrid is you.
I'm human, with a little bit of Maya inside me. The hybrid is supposed to be half time, not half Dalek.
No, it isn't. The actual prophecy specifies only two warrior races. The Daleks and the Time Lords made assumptions, of course. And they would. Humans and the Maya. Both warrior races. It fits perfectly.
It's an interesting theory.
Do you have a better one?
By your own reasoning. Why couldn't the hybrid be half Time Lord, half human? Tell me, Doctor, I've always wondered. You're a Time Lord, you're a highborn Gallifreyan. Why is it you spend so much time on Earth?
That's your best theory. I'm the hybrid. I ran away from Gallifrey because I was afraid of myself. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes perfect sense, and you know it. Am I right? Is it true?
Doesn't matter.
No. Because I have a better theory.
Really?
What if hybrid wasn't one person, but two?
Two.
A dangerous combination of a passionate and powerful Time Lord and a young woman so very similar to him. Companions who are willing to push each other to extremes.
She's my friend. She's just my friend.
How did you meet her? Missy.
Missy.
Missy. The master. The lover of chaos.
So what did you think of the reveal?
Well, it's not a true reveal. There's so many other possibilities and permutations. I mean, running with their theory.
Well, who's the last three people in the universe at that time? It's all connected with the Doctor here. There's a comfy chair at the end of the universe, which chair. I thought was neat. They got 5 minutes. So Sheila is asking the Doctor, well, might as well give it up now. There's nothing left.
Mm-hmm. So you've got, on the one hand... and it echoes, you know, there's no such thing as a half Dalek.
Right.
So we can dismiss Time Lord's Dalek hybrid, even though there's been elements that we've seen the Daleks do mix and allow, you know, other things to enter in.
They made a human Dalek as well in a David Tennant episode.
But
where he went to New York, by the way, and could go out of it again, Amy and Rory.
But you've got the possibility of it being Doctor and Clara. You've got the possibility of it being Missy and someone else. You have the possibility of it being the Doctor and Missy. You have so many permutations once you break away from it being one individual. And I'm also thinking back, we're in kind of an era of the great super companions. Because you've had Dr. Donna, you had Bad Wolf. We've got Clara as an unstoppable force now.
Martha Jones.
Well, Martha Jones at least was normal. You know, she wasn't enhanced some way by, you know, entering into the time warp stream.
She was normally incredible.
She was normally incredible, yeah. So, you know, River is always just been a unique individual who, again, the time stream mixing in with humans. So we've seen these mighty, you know, supranatural companions already exist. So, you know, that could be the hybrid. Or at the same time, the hybrid just might be a boogeyman in order to make people stop and pause and reflect on, is this really something that I want to do?
Hmm.
You know,
a prophecy for the sake of the reaction.
Which many prophecies exist. When we look at the Old Testament, the prophecies were really not future foretellings. They were warnings. If you follow this path, then this will happen. But if you remember, God said this, so if you do that, then this will happen. And so it was basically just reaffirming, you have a choice to make. Just choose the right path or face the consequences. And again, truth and consequences. The, right. The whole echo of this,
and
this season.
A path.
I felt the same way. I just
see. I don't think this is like set in stone. It was Clara and the Doctor is the hybrid, or was that just a shield of spitballing?
I'll say I hope not. Yeah. Because I like Clara, but this is, to me, this is the same thing as what we'll talk about with the next installment. That, you know, you have a mountain here, like, you know, you can only interact with a mountain on so many levels, and despite Clara being sharded throughout all time, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Doctor's timeline, she's still Clara. I mean, that's where they left it now, is that she's still just Clara.
The sunrise noticed her.
Well.
Mm. Or but, the sunset, whatever.
Yeah,
River
sunset.
Said.
Yeah. But I just... they dropped the ball on a chance to make Clara more than just Clara.
Mm.
Because when... when they did the whole thing of splintering her through the timeline,
yeah,
and they set up the stories of the impossible girl, and then, like, oh, but here she is in 2014, 15, and she's just Clara Oswald.
Well, she has, like, a lot of conflicting stuff anyway, because all of a sudden she's a teacher when before she was a nanny. You don't ever see those kids before. Her whole family is kind of like in flux. You don't know who her mom or dad is, if they're dead or not dead, because there's been conflicting stories there. What was the stepmother at the grand at Christmas?
There's the stepmom, yeah.
You see her grandmother, and that's like the only permanent fix, I guess, because you see her twice, which is amazing for Clara's storyline.
Exactly.
But she was in such flux that I think a lot of people were kind of like, oh, so over Clara, because they never knew who she really was.
Yeah.
And I don't think she, as an actress, knew exactly either. I mean, she was Victorian Clara. She was Dalek Clara. And then Bonnie, even. I mean, she was so many different characters so far. And now she's Clara without a heartbeat, you know, who has William Hartnell TARDIS, which was awesome.
Yeah.
With the roundels and the round things, and she was
so
flying.
White.
Yeah, yeah. It's just neat seeing it and seeing Peter Capaldi in the classic TARDIS.
Yeah, and I think that's... I mean, I won't get into, again, the suspension of disbelief stuff about you know, how it is that a brain functions even though your body is not performing any metabolic
time loop,
you know,
Rob,
functionality.
Time loop.
But... I don't know. I just think, again, like you said, that there was just so much that Clara, that Jenna Coleman had to do on the show, all the different ways that she had to play characters, that I've kind of lost interest, especially once it was all tied up with that. I always go back to the splintering thing, but that just, like, ruined it for me, because the Impossible Girl had such potential, and now it's kind of, I mean, at the same time, that also opened up for Clara to be his conscience. In a sense, Clara now is the song from the next episode, where, you know, where she shows up in his time when he needs her.
Yeah.
Because now that she's been splintered all throughout him, that, you know, she could technically be there anytime. You know, she could
show up.
And now
she has a TARDIS.
Well, I mean, but that's the point, though, is that now there could be two of her showing up anywhere at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was already splintered through all of his time stream.
Well, there always could be with time travel, because she was in...
Right, but I'm saying...
But she was a different Clara, though, too, correct? Right?
No, that's...
Would have been born and 1320 and save the Doctor in 1340.
Mm-hmm. But see, but this is what I mean, that why they broke her story. Because if they were trying to write off Victorian Clara and Dalek Clara as just those were parts of her that were splintered throughout his timeline,
right.
Then why didn't she know who he was either of those times?
Yeah, because I get
that. She was splintered having known who he was because she sacrificed herself.
Mm-hmm. But she actually was born at certain times.
But that's then, exactly. But then Victorian Clara, she was actually someone who was born at that time, grew up in that time, and lived a life
without
the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when he showed up, we had the whole thing of her meeting him and getting to know him. And
mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I won't keep beating on how much it bothers me that they had so much potential with it. And they kind of just, like, well, we'll do Sex Machina this one and just, yeah, we'll write it off.
But that being said, what did you think of the series overall? Do you think that Moffat made this Series 9 a winner?
I think that as far as wrapping up this season, this series, I think that it was good. I think the next story we'll get into more for what he's done for all of Doctor Who over the last few seasons. Because I think with that exemplifies more how he's been trying to, as I said earlier, that episode I think exemplifies a little bit more how he's trying to kind of correct things about the way that the story's been kind of led away from the old mythology. But mm-hmm. But I thought this was good for bringing me back in and the way they're doing that to just kind of like wrap her story up and give her, you know, to give Maisie Williams the chance to come back and be me again later on in Doctor Who. You know, they didn't kill her off. They didn't lock her away in E-Space. You know, mm-hmm. they didn't...
Right.
They didn't, you know, they didn't end her like they ended Rose, where, like, now she's locked away in this other dimension that they can't access. You know, like, she's still available. The same thing with Clara. You know, mm-hmm. she is technically still available to show up now. I guess if Moffat or Jenna or whoever just has a whim, like, oh, you know what, I think I want to be in an episode this week. But I don't know, it was good though. Like I said, it was good, it was fun, adventurous.
I thought it was the best series so far.
Yeah
out of the new Doctor Who.
Hmm.
I think Peter Capaldi is incredible. I mean, I was so excited with Eccleston coming and Doctor Who getting rebooted. That was unbelievable, and I think they did that really well. It's mm-hmm. unfortunate that he only did one series. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I loved Peter Capaldi's last season, and I know mm-hmm. a lot of people were down on it. I don't know. What were you down on?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. To me, it was like, this is a fan who loves the Doctor, and he loves playing the Doctor, and mm-hmm. I love how his hair has changed, and he's mm-hmm. gotten more wild man.
Yeah.
Kind of, and his faces, his expressions are classic.
Mm-hmm.
The eyebrows.
Just the smile is very disarming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that when you think about the new seasons, or the new series, whatever you want to call it, I think this was the best season out of this reboot of the show. Because I think the giving each story, almost every story, at least two parts.
Mm-hmm.
Breath.
To be able to really play with it.
Yeah.
I think it was a little more coherent than previous seasons have been. I think the only sidestep we really had with this one was Sleep No More.
Yeah,
which
agreed.
I don't know why. Like, the more I think about that episode in light of the rest of the season, the more I'm like, what was that?
That was
like there
that
had
was...
to have been. There must be something bigger that he's planning with that. Or
God, I hope not.
Just or to be honest, yeah, I hope that he turns around and says, "I don't know why we did that."
Yeah, exactly.
The same way they says, "I don't know why we did the Skittles Daleks."
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
because
like mistake made. Okay, let's move on. Let's forget about it.
I agree. I think as far as taking this set of stories and the way that they wrapped them together and finished it, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it was good.
Would you like to be a Shielder, Peter? Live for eternity?
No.
With a temporal mind?
I think we had already touched on this, immortality, some discussion before. It might have even been on when Ashilda became immortal. I've always believed immortality is a curse. I wouldn't want to experience it. I get a life, and after that I get a wonderful eternity of rest. And I'm kind of looking forward to that.
With consciousness or without consciousness?
I believe with a consciousness.
So you're saying that you wouldn't want to live eternally, but you're going to be living eternally? Is that what you're saying?
There's a total difference. One, my brain is not hardwired for any kind of non-finite existence, which is why I think Paul calls the resurrection the renewing restoration of the mind, and, you know, this... We trade the imperfect for the perfect. So I kind of need that process, and no alien technology is really ever going to allow my brain to be able to function with an eternity of loss, with seeing stars die all around me. I don't think I would be able to sit in that chair at mm-hmm. the end of space and time and looking out at the destruction of the universe and... be able to have any kind of non-drooling, babbling experience after that.
I'm surprised she isn't crazy, yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Rob, do you think that she would continue to repair even after the universe blinked out of existence and all the hydrogen was used up?
That's something I was just thinking about as Peter was talking about living eternally. We had eternal life. That doesn't mean the rest of the universe does.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to us when, as you said... every star burns out and, you know, there is no anything left mm-hmm. but us. What happens then?
Is there an e-space where we can go to another universe like they did in the State of Decay episode?
Well, right? I mean, that's the question is, you know, what about that? What if nobody's ever developed space travel by then?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put it that way. The only thing I can imagine would be very painful. Because I can imagine that you would basically be suffering however you would in space without a suit for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
At the same time, if everything is burned out, then is there even moisture to create ice? You know,
no.
Like, and that's where it's insane. Like, you can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm. We'll either have the big freeze or the big crunch, which regenerates another.
Right. Exactly.
Several. Million billion years of such intense heat that there's not even atoms yeah, able to form.
Exactly.
So, you know, how on earth would you be able to survive that kind of
You'd have
experience?
A Meyer device implanted in your brain that was
but
constantly
how,
repairing
how
it.
How on earth could that constantly repair in that level of
heat? It couldn't heat? Because that would be burned up as well.
But that's what I was going to say. I have the feeling that, yeah, if she's been reprogrammed with that,
yeah.
then there has to be an extreme that can't put up with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole fact that she's there for eternity, basically, they're not taking entropy as a scientific fact.
Yeah.
Really, because that little hardware would disintegrate.
Well, there's again,
sometime.
But there's even the point, too, about, as you were speaking about entropy, is that how it kind of brings back to what we were saying about, we kind of mentioned it, I'll say, during Heaven Sent, but we didn't really get into it, is that where a memory is stored. And that
yeah.
If her body never had to suffer entropy because the Meyer device always restored her to how she was when it was implanted, then what does that say about synapses and
mm-hmm.
things like that in the brain? You know, are synapses
yeah.
literally just the electrodes that keep going? And it even touches back onto her story about how she can't remember. She can only remember so much.
Yeah,
is that maybe part of the Meyer device? And I mean, we're gonna. This is getting into stuff more than the show will ever even try to touch on.
Our brain does have a finite amount of memory.
Right.
And we're doing some studies in, like, titmice and chickadees and other types of birds that annually remap their brains.
Right.
And so we're starting to understand how they're doing that and then be able to apply that to us for things like Alzheimer's mm-hmm. and many other mental deficiency
right.
Diseases. And so that's... giving us some potential hope on, oh, here's how we can begin to regenerate this. And then titmice still have to relearn certain things. You know, it's not a perfect
right.
Save the brain kind of concept, but it's better than the alternative.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are looking into these. But it's still a storage device. It's going to get full up, and we have to delete old files
mm-hmm.
in order to make room for the new ones.
Right.
Yeah, I find myself the older I get, I just going on that. like, there's probably been like months of my life where you have exact memories. Like, I can remember the last couple months for me now, and then
mm-hmm.
4 months, 5 months ago? What did I eat that day? Or
did I even eat that
yeah,
day?
Yeah, you would have no idea. I don't remember. I don't ever remember this person doing such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Because you weren't paying attention or just out of your brain. And I remember at 14 or 15 or 16 in high school, a classmate of mine told me that they had no recollection of their childhood. Now, me at the time, I said, I remember everything from my childhood. There wasn't a thing that I thought I didn't remember.
Mm.
The older you get, now I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's because my life has changed so dramatically over the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
there's been like whole parts of it that I didn't want to remember
either.
So it was almost like, okay, you're gone. That's a different me. Mm-hmm. And so you don't even remember, you know, silly things like kittens that I used to bottle feed. Or I don't remember their names. I don't remember certain dogs that I would foster and because they had names too. But after a couple hundred kittens, you're not going to remember every one of them. But at the time, that was the most important thing to do, to come home and be the food god, you know, with the bottle and making sure that they were fed and had fat bellies. But anyway, I digress.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's funny about memories too, though, is that things like that, you know, kittens that you saw every day and you had to bottle feed, you don't remember their names anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, how many memories do you have that were just fleeting instances?
And that stick
like
with
things
you.
That, but somehow they stick.
Yeah.
Like, it's just neat to think about
how
sometimes, you know, certain things are just so bright. They just make such an, you know, they burn so hard into it.
Even dreams that never even happened.
Yeah. No, very true. I have dreams from, you know, upwards of, you know, 15 years ago that I can still remember vividly. They're just dreams. I mean, I don't know, maybe dreams. Maybe because the brain created them, maybe they stick in a little better or something.
I'm a huge fan of Charles DeLint, and one of the things he says in his book Memory and Dream is sometimes we forget which is which.
Mm-hmm.
That memory becomes dreams, or we had a dream and we think sometimes that it was a memory.
Mm-hmm. And the stories are where memories go when we have forgotten them.
Right, exactly. I loved that. I love the little one-liners in this season.
Mm-hmm.
That's so... like at the end of everything, you find immortals.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a throwaway line. But the sister from the Sisterhood of Karn is still there 4.5 billion years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or now. Yeah. And I remembered last time during Heaven Sent, we postulated whether or not 4.5 billion years had actually passed.
Right.
And we see in this episode, it seems like it has.
Mm-hmm.
So the universe, if the universe started 15 billion years ago, now the universe is almost 20 billion years during this time. And you also see, because of the time war, they always infer that there's a lot less planets. There's a lot less things going on. And as the universe expands, it gets further and further away from everything. So we, a trip, that is why space travel is so crazy, even a thought. Because it would take so many years, light years, to get from one thing to another, unless we had some kind of device.
Wormholes, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting the way they characterized just they are at the end of the universe. There is nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the most hated things that there are. The Time Lords are hated.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a policy of non-intervention for so long. And there's actually a Tom Baker episode, The Image of the Fondal? No, Underworld, where the reason is given for why they are non-interventionists. Mm-hmm. Because, and they were considered gods by some people.
Yeah.
Oh, the Prawn King, and his line, you know, you were toothless lions, and then you realized you had teeth or something along those lines. And they kind of woke up. Many different races kind of forgot about them or didn't care about them, and then suddenly they're the ones destroying the universe that they had for so long preserved. Fascinating concept.
The neuroblocker.
Ah.
Gonna play. Oh, excuse me. Play a clip about the neuroblocker.
It'll be nothing. It'll just pass out for a moment.
And then?
When you wake,
It'll be fine.
But...
Clara, just listen to me.
Just say it. Say it. Come on. Tell me.
When you wake up, you will have forgotten me. You'll have forgotten we ever even met.
And why would I want that?
Because it's the only way. That stuff in your head, the image of me, they could use it to find you.
I use these.
On what?
That.
What did you do?
What do you think? Shield was right, you see? We're two alike.
Tell me what you did.
What else? What else do you think I did? I reversed the polarity. Push that button, Doctor. It will go off in your own face.
You're trying to trick me.
What are you trying to do to me?
I'm trying to keep you safe.
Why? Nobody's ever safe. I've never asked you for that, ever. These have been the best years of my life, and they are mine. Tomorrow's promised to no one, Doctor, but I insist upon my past. I am entitled to that. It's mine.
I like how you have Clara's song playing mm-hmm. in the background. Mm-hmm. I often wondered why she stepped in to the open door when she was brave and ready to die. And now this, she reversed the polarity, Doctor Who trick on a trick.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So she's acting like the Doctor again and preserving herself. And the Doctor just can't get it through his thick skull that sometimes it's good to have endings, because he hates to say goodbye. He hates endings. He wants summer to be forever. Mm-hmm. He mentions mm-hmm. summer can stay forever. So, like, school's out, you know.
I was kind of wondering, too, why she would have gone through, but, I mean, that was from the previous
curiosity.
Episode now, but now, like... I gotta wonder if it's because what she was saying, that, well, you can fix this, right? Like, previously, that mm-hmm. she expected the Doctor would be able to find a way to fix it, so that's why she just carried on with, you know, letting herself be taken by the Raven, because maybe she just expected it, and so when that happened, she was like, oh, see, here he is, saving the day. So...
There's also possibly... When she stepped forward to receive the Raven, she was ready then. She had surrendered to the Raven, and now her selfishness kicks in. Mm-hmm. She's offered a chance,
right,
and so...
she sees him saying, come on, I've got it fixed. Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, never mind.
Yep,
now
all right,
now
all right.
Now I see a door, okay.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and we do tend to do that a lot as we go through life. You know, we've made the decision we're going to go in and talk to our boss about this, and then something else happens and it's, oh, no, never mind. Didn't mm-hmm. do that. Didn't happen. Yeah. Nobody saw it.
It's true.
And when they're at the gate in the Matrix, or the plate on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and trying to open it, she asks him, how long was it? And that's when the sister says, we... figure by our calculations, approximately 4.5 billion years.
Hmm.
And she looks at him and says, why would you do that to yourself? And he kind of like has a non-committal, like, I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, what do you mean? And then he says, I had a duty of care. Like, there wasn't even a question in his head mm-hmm. as to what he was really doing to himself, because mm-hmm. time didn't matter. He was just, this is what he was going to do. He was going to go the long way around, not confess anything. And it was almost, in a way, autistic to me, the mentality,
mm-hmm.
where he wasn't, that the logical connection there
right.
wasn't cued,
mm-hmm.
wasn't clicking.
Right. Yeah, he just saw that, oh, this is what I have to do. I'm going to do this, and didn't think about whether there was a different way or...
It was the only way. It was mm-hmm. the way that he thought initially,
mm-hmm.
through every variation of himself,
mm-hmm.
every time he hardwired himself up again and mm-hmm. reset himself in heaven sent. And it was just really telling the way Capaldi played it. So, like, head kind of cocked like a little bit when he says, I had a duty of care. Like, he didn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just something that I...
That also makes sense, you know. We tend to, that's a very human thing, you know, especially if you're, and Rob, you'd be able to speak better on this as a parent, what wouldn't you do for your kids?
Hmm.
So, a thousand times over if need be. So,
and they kind of inferred that when, as Sheila said, and you did, she's your friend, and well, then what are you going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Now that she's back, well, what are you going to do now? Like, is she really a friend?
Mm-hmm.
Is this what you wanted? You've splintered the universe apart just so that she would be okay, but at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he kind of realizes that he stepped too far.
Although I do kind of have to wonder, is that really going to splinter the universe? Is him taking 4.5 billion years as a Time Lord, you can hop back in the TARDIS and just go back.
Well, I think what she was talking about was Clara being taken out and that fixed point of death being now not, and basically being two separate events that happen. One, the fixed point, Clara dying, and the other, this is a Clara without a heartbeat, now about to go into the rest of time and changing other things that shouldn't have been changed. Sort of like an extra innings in baseball that should have never happened because this guy in the outfield dropped the ball instead. I don't know. It just seemed like it's something that shouldn't have been is now, and now it's going to change because that thing that happened previously got altered.
Well, unless it's always meant to be, in which case then you don't have the paradox. The only time that you have the paradox is when you're standing on the outside going, well, this shouldn't be. But if you're on the inside, it's progressing just as normally as it should have.
It's an extension of the Marvel What If comics.
See, and it's funny because just as we're talking about this, I'm thinking of me and my overanalyzing loopback paradoxes. But really, I just suddenly dawned on me to think about the fact that if Clara hadn't let herself die, what would have happened to the Doctor from there? You know, but so then because she didn't die yet, because he saved her, now she's stuck in this time loop, Clara's never going to die.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, she is. When she gets her heartbeat back, she goes back to that moment and she does die. In fact, I would even argue that since we're in time travel, she's going to go back to that point where she's now standing in Trap Street and about to be hit by the Raven.
But does that happen between the one heartbeat and the next now get subtracted? Like, now she's in the TARDIS, correct? And she has the ability to change other things. But if the Raven does actually catch her, will the Raven bring her back 4.5 billion years previous? And now stop it, and now everything that she could have possibly altered is now not altered.
No, I would argue that it's still altered. It's just, rather than looking at string, or as time as a single string stretched between two points, I think of it as more of a balled up wad of crazy substantial, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey. So it's all happened. You know, all of Clara's activities have happened in those however long she decides to wander around, and eventually she will return to that point.
So they've already happened? She's not an active agent in changing?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a loopback. She's doing what she's always done because she always has to do it, because if she doesn't, then it doesn't happen.
Very good. Now, audience, I hope you got that.
Well, it's funny because I said that in the last... No, there was percent, too. Yep. But that's exactly what it is.
Rewind.
Is that because if anything was different, if she didn't go back there, then it wouldn't have caused it to happen.
Yeah.
Like, she can't... She couldn't... As she is now with Ishilda, with me, she can't go to the Doctor when they're talking about the Trap Street and say, no, let's not go there because I'm going to die and then all of this craziness is going to happen. Like, she can't do that. Because if she did that, then she would never be there to tell them not to go, and then they would go.
Well, that's essentially what the Doctor did. That's essentially how the Doctor works now. He says, screw it all. Time heals itself. That the paradoxes largely resolve themselves, and I don't have to worry about
except
it anymore.
For River
I can just
Song
continue
in the next
to be
episode,
the Doctor.
But we'll get there.
What?
Except for when he's talking to River Song in the next episode, but we'll get there.
But even on that one, when you look at that whole the killer astronaut story arc and the death at Lake Silencio, all that still fell into the same pattern that it had to each and every time. Except for when River blasted all of her energy off into the lake instead of into the Doctor's robot form. But aside from the point.
Well, yeah.
All right. Una mas, don't worry. I'll remember. Audio clip.
one of us would. I don't think I could ever forget you.
Oh, I don't think I'm ever gonna have to. Because you always need to laugh at everything. It's always funny.
No, stop it. You're saying goodbye. Don't say goodbye.
Never be cruel. And never be cowardly. And if you ever are, always make amends.
Stop it. Stop. Stop it.
Never eat pears. They're too squishy. And they always make your chin wet. That one's quite important. Write it down.
I didn't mean to do this. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. I went too far. I broke all my own rules. I became the hybrid. This is right. I accept it.
I can't. There has to be something I can do.
Smile for me. Go on. Clara Oswald.
Now, what he says is he remembers her, but not. He doesn't remember Clara, but he has no memory of how she talked, how she laughed, anything.
But plenty of memories
of their adventures.
Of their adventures.
Right. Which is neat, because, I mean, after you've... I mean, he's lived for, what, 2,000 years by this time? Well, plus 4.5 billion, although he only remembers a week of that other... I guess. Who knows where it goes. It's funny how sometimes you'll be telling a story to someone and in the middle of it, you won't remember if, say, Bob and Paul and I were all out at this restaurant. And then you don't remember if Jim was there, too. Mm-hmm. You don't exactly know. And Jim could have been there. But over time, that kind of wears away and you weren't sure. If
the details get fuzzy.
Right. Yeah. And I find that with myself sometimes. And so now it seems like that's how they're explaining it. But Clara was such an important part. Mm. But now he's been Donna Nobled, I guess.
Although with Donna, she didn't remember even the stories.
Yeah.
Like they made the one passing reference of, you know, planets in the sky. And what are people going to come up with next?
Right.
You know, these are just...
Although in this too, Rigby paints the TARDIS. That's the inference that and Clara's picture is on there. Although it kind of looks like Emma Watson,
yeah,
a little bit. Actually, yeah. It doesn't look so much like Clara. So maybe he had the adventures with Emma Watson, which would be awesome. Other than that, no. I think it was a great ending. I'm glad Clara gets to. She can make me a sandwich anytime she wants and make me bacon and eggs and whatever else she does there at the diner. I don't know if she charges, but or if it's just play the guitar and end up getting a story. It was a neat episode the way they played it out. And it's interesting thinking back to the Amy Rory at Lake Silencia, because if I remember right, the doctor came out of that door.
Yeah.
Matt Smith at one point.
Yes, he did.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but it wasn't the TARDIS at the time. It was on the other side of the hill, he says. I remember this restaurant, but it was on the other side of
the hill. Yeah.
Unless.
Yeah. A little revisionist history.
Mm. Although, I vaguely recall a flushing sound from when
I believe so, too. Yeah.
Left the diner. So I'm thinking not, you know, it was the one on the other side of the hill.
We never see that in the adventures where all of a sudden, I got to go pee. Oh, my God, I got to go pee.
Yeah, it's true.
Never seen the bathroom on Star Trek.
Stop for a bathroom break before we really get into the cyber wars.
One of these days, they will do that.
So this is the conclusion of the series. Now, we probably have some interesting, interesting continuity stuff in the stack of stuff
One thing about her TARDIS, which I think is just interesting, is the fact that they show it flying around in space as the
diner.
As the diner, right?
Right.
But the front door of the diner is not the front door of the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
So it has, like, you know, the diner is kind of built onto the exterior of the structure of the TARDIS, as opposed to anytime you see the Masters or the Doctors, that whatever, you know, there is the structure, and mm-hmm. as soon as you walk into that structure, you're inside the control room. So she kind of, they did something different with it, like the way that it works.
Well, just like, you know, expanding the atmosphere shell. They expanded the
true
chameleon circuit shell.
True, yeah, that's true. Well, plus two, who knows, maybe it is actually a diner, and they just mm-hmm. have the, you know, the chameleon circuit set to be functioning as the interior. And
there was also the one time that the TARDIS was an organ, where you had to play the keys, but the front door was actually the back of that. So in a way, that was kind of also similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when Colin Baker fixed the chameleon, well, quote unquote, fixed the chameleon circuit, and it was an organ, and he played, I think he played Bach.
Yeah,
Toccata and Fugue.
Toccata and Fugue.
Yeah, and yeah, that was the Attack of the Cybermen with Lytton, who is one of the great Doctor Who anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm.
That was a neat story. One of Colin Baker's best, and he and Perry were very good in that. For those of you who haven't watched it, the newer Doctor Who fans amongst you. And Colin Baker gets a rough shake of the stick sometimes, but he was tough to swallow for a lot of people.
Well, he was given such a weird start off.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I did want to mention the barn. Who's the woman in the barn?
She seems to be kind of a nanny. What really impressed me is she said, no, that's for the boys. It was very distinctly plural there. And kind of gives the possibility that the Doctor and the Master may have, as kids, hung out together, had sleepovers together, or maybe he has other relations that we haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it seemed like they weren't mother and son. It seemed more like a nanny.
They couldn't be, because she would have known who he was right away.
Well, she did know who he was.
Because she immediately, once she saw his face, it
she just saw the bottom of his chin at first, and then she saw the rest of his face, and the realization hit her who he was.
That's right.
Which goes back again to Time Lords knowing who other Time Lords are. That's why when David Tennant sees the Master, who doesn't know he's the Master,
that didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't.
Mm.
But anyway, and other Time Lords who have seen other Time Lords too.
Right.
Sigma.
Yes, the Matrix.
When Time Lords die, their minds are uploaded to a thing called the Matrix. This structure is like a living computer. It can predict the future, generate prophecies out of algorithms, ring the cloister bells in the event of impending catastrophe.
It's the host server for the Internet of Things.
Well, and it was introduced in The Deadly Assassin with Tom Baker, and he actually hooks himself up to the Matrix prior to him being dead, and Senator Goth
mm-hmm.
hooks him, or the Master actually hooks him up as well, and they have a war inside mm-hmm. where one is controlling the atmosphere and the Matrix, the world that Senator Goth creates for the Doctor to try to survive,
mm-hmm.
sort of like a as a short story, The Most Dangerous Game,
mm-hmm.
and kind of a play on that. And so we've seen the Matrix before. And it was not stolen from the Matrix. It came prior to the Matrix movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was neat that they had a different take on it, where once you enter this realm, you were never getting out.
Right.
Which didn't seem to be the inference. Well, he could overload his circuits, his mind. It could blow his mind.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a lot of, it started with an A, some kind of Arcton energy or something in his brain. Something that made him really survive as Tom mm-hmm. Baker in it, because Tom Baker was indestructible.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, even Colin Baker did, too. During...
The Valyard.
Yeah.
Episodes, The Trial of a Time Lord.
There we go. Yep.
Yeah, so it was neat, the reintroduction of the Matrix, although in a different way. And these cloister wraiths, I don't know where everyone is going on. And cloister bells have all of a sudden become a major component of... We used to hear it very rarely in the classic show, and now we constantly...
It's like every other episode. Every other story now, we have cloister bells going off. Yeah. Mm. Well, that's what's funny, too, is I remember, like, you know, as a younger person watching it, like, when you'd hear the cloister bells, you're like, oh, this is big. Like,
right. It was very, very... I mean, I guess it is big, too, the things that are happening here.
I think... But just the frequency of it in the past.
Yeah. If you make everything big, then nothing is big.
Exactly. So...
And so we had the cloister... Wars, apparently, this thing that we really know nothing about either. Mm-hmm. I did some research on it, and there's really nothing. So,
yeah.
Maybe it's, nothing even on TARDIS Wiki. So it just seems like out of
something
the blue,
new.
Out of the air. Yeah. So maybe they'll expand on that later.
Probably. And it's a neat idea that the Daleks and the Weeping Angels and Cybermen and who knows what else will... It makes sense that these would have tried to enter into a computer database of all of the Time Lord knowledge and history. So I could see that being a huge, giant attraction for all of the forces in the universe. And it would have to have some kind of defense mechanisms and, you know, incorporating these is to become part of that defense. That was a neat... twist that Moffat's throwing in, and if we see more of this, it would be interesting to see how he develops it.
I think he will, because there is sort of foreshadowing going on while the Doctor is talking to Clara, as they're at the thing that they're trying to open, this like grate in the ground where mm-hmm. he's trying to find the mm-hmm. key, and he tells Clara a story of a little boy who got lost. And it ends up as the story, of course,
it's
about him,
right? And he kind of makes that inference that it was about himself, and that, you know, you kind of go crazy. And I would like to see, you know, some of that play out where we get the, I don't know, you get the baby Jesus and the 12-year-old Jesus and then the grown-up 30-year-old Jesus. Well, we've had the grown-up, you know, doctor, you know, mm-hmm. but we don't have a lot of, like, young mm-hmm. doctor kind of stories. And
We've only ever, as far as I know, seen two snippets of the Doctor as a young boy, one where he was first being brought to the Time Vortex, and the other one where he was afraid of what was underneath his bed.
And we hear John Pertwee tell a story about sludgy snow and this old man that he used to visit, a very wise man.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember if it was Pertwee or Baker. But
yeah,
I was
Planet of the Spiders.
Yeah, because I was just thinking it would be interesting if they try to play around, almost like they did with Davros, where if they play around, or maybe he was even the old man on the mountain that...
Mm.
That Pertwee talked that he would go and visit and
There was the reveal at the end of Planet of Spiders. It was Rinpoche. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it was a Time Lord that was at the end of his very time, and he actually helped him become the Super Doctor, Tom Baker.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
He gave him a little push,
mm-hmm.
Kenpo.
And who's to say that isn't him too?
Yeah, no. Exactly. Him giving himself wise admonishments,
right, giving him different names and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe as he gets older, he's trying to hide who he is and, you know, how involved he was. Maybe.
Or you go back to make sure that things proceed the way that they're supposed to.
Mm.
Well, often in Doctor Who, the way it's supposed to ends up being part of the Doctor doing something that mm-hmm. he wasn't supposed to, and then that's how London burned.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It is very strange how they I don't know. A lot. Since there are so many writers from one episode to the next, it's tough to say that they're all going to write the same way. But it mm-hmm. is funny when you think about some of the ways that they've played with the bootstrap paradox, and mm-hmm. how sometimes like they've made it work in their benefit, and other times they've intentionally broken it.
Mm-hmm.
For their benefit. But.
Well, just thinking off the top of my head, William Hartnell's Doctor was the reason that Rome burned.
Right.
Because of Nero mm-hmm. and his interference there. And mm-hmm. you had the Mary Celeste was the Mary Celeste, because Daleks and the Doctor during the chase were, mm-hmm. and then all the crewmen jumped off overboard, and just so many different things. Peter Davison's Pterileptal episode where mm-hmm. London burned, and you see at the end. But no, he always seems to be, you know, the reason for these catastrophes.
Yeah, all this history. It's all because of him.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. How many TARDISes, Peter? Hellbent TARDISes.
For Hellbent, how many TARDISes? I liked it enough. I think it's worthy of a 5. I thought it was an excellent end to the series, to the Clara era. Had a lot of fullness, completion, homages to the past, foreshadowing of the future. So yeah, I think it's a worthy 5.
Go Moffat.
Yeah.
5 from Peter. Rob?
I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
Because it was good, but I like being a little bit more reserved in my 5s. I like holding them off for things like Listen, you know, yeah. ones that just really, like, just hit you in the jaw. So.
Good. I loved this episode. We didn't really talk about the whole human side of the Doctor, where it was inferred again when it was kind of like a joke in the movie. Mm-hmm. But Ashila did mention his interest in Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was brought up in the War Games, Patrick Troughton said, well, Earth seems to be more vulnerable than other planets. He didn't even give any indication.
Like it was more just that he felt he had to watch out for a little bit more.
And when he was finally exiled there as Pertwee. So that was the reason he took interest in Earth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was exiled there.
You kind of get used to hanging out with a certain group of people. So,
and he looks like them. He doesn't look any different. So he doesn't. Mm-hmm. Look like, I guess he doesn't look like a typical alien, whether what we think a little green man or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or walking around with suction cups all over you, you know.
Right.
Like that.
Right. I don't know, I'm on the fence between like a 4.75 or 5, still high. And I think the last 3 episodes have been just awesome. I think the whole series has been well rounded, other mm-hmm. than Sleep No More. Mm-hmm. Mark Gatiss should have a little, I don't know, like a piano teacher bang on his knuckles a little bit for that one. But yeah, Moffat's done a great job. Mm-hmm. And I know he's trying to find a replacement in the rumor mill, mm-hmm. and he's mm-hmm. finding it difficult. And half of me just wants to say, stop Sherlock, continue Doctor Who.
Hmm. Yeah.
Although Sherlock has a lot running for it as well. It's an interesting concept, but
yeah,
who would win out for me over Sherlock?
Right. Peter Capaldi's name is a lot easier to say than
Benedict Cumberbatch. Yes, it's true.
He sounds more English, at least.
Yeah. But. And all the variations thereof of his last name.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you have it. So wow, we're all up in the four and a half about, I guess, overall for the 3 of us.
Yep.
So great job, Moffat. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our discussion. If you have anything extra to add, any questions, please feel free to contact us via Facebook, whosonpodcast.com, Player FM, iTunes, the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance.
Google thing. I don't know if that's Google up Play. Yet or not. I haven't been paying attention.
And your Twitter.
Yeah, we're on Twitter account. At Who's On Podcast. It really just gets used for posting episodes. Doesn't really get a lot of interaction, but there.
Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed.
Yep. Thank you for listening.
For Barry, Peter, and Rob.
Mm-hmm.